What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
We made this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it was a cold-blooded, premeditated murder.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Red and Berry Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Frankie.
And we've got the lovely Adam Simcox with us today, whose new book, The Generation Killer, has just come out, I think, probably about 3 weeks ago now, 2 weeks, something like that.
Yep, that's right. Hi, everyone. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Every week at the moment, Adam, it feels like I basically say, I met this author at Harrogate, and I'm going to do it again because I met Adam at Harrogate. And it was so lovely to meet you, and we're so excited to have you with us. So thank you for joining.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure.
Before we get into the fun stuff, talking about your book and asking lots of stupid questions about silly things, I've got a little bio to read about you. So hopefully this is all correct. You can tell me afterwards if it's horribly wrong. So okay. Here we go. Adam Simcox is a London-based filmmaker who shot commercials for brands such as McLaren, Primark and Vice, presumably not at the same time, as well as music videos for Britpop veterans and fresh on-the-scene alt-country stars. He started his film career by writing and directing three features, the first sold to Netflix, the second and third winning awards and critical acclaim at festivals worldwide. Adam has written two novels in his Joe Lazarus book series. The first, The Dying Squad, came out in 2021 to yet more critical acclaim. The second book, The Generation Killer, is out now and is described as Line of Duty Means Rivers of London, a supernatural crime series about a dead detective investigating crimes the living police can't solve. Adam lives in London with his wife and two children. When he's not writing books, making films, and enjoying critical acclaim, he enjoys watching football, collecting vinyl, and graciously giving his precious free time to appear on Silly Little Book podcasts.
Man, I tell you what, I love that critically acclaimed stuff.
Very critically acclaimed, did you know?
I don't know. I'm definitely going to rewrite my bio to reflect that more vigorously. No, that's very, very generous biography. Thank you.
I think you should change all of your introductions from now on as critically acclaimed Adam Simcox.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know whether you can get it before your name, like a doctor, ward,
like
or professor.
Yeah.
But I'll
who's going to stop you? Just start.
Exactly.
Cover all your books.
If there's one way to get people on side that you haven't met before as well, it's like needless boasting, I find. So
I like the idea of just having CA at the end of your name. And everyone's like, what does that stand for? Like critically acclaimed.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to bring it up, but as you're asking me, yeah, it means I'm critically acclaimed.
I have to include it, but you didn't have to ask. So that's on you.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I guess, first of all, I think we both read over the last couple of weeks, The Generation Killer, really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I mean, I probably wouldn't say if I didn't, but
yeah. Yeah. Very professional.
Wasn't
that
a book? It had words, yeah. Chapters.
What I really enjoyed was obviously, as you can tell from the name of the podcast, we do lots of crime thriller. I never read any sort of fantasy, and it doesn't hugely appeal to me, fantasy as a whole, but urban fantasy is kind of a different story, right?
Because you're quite gritty, accessible. Sarah.
Yeah, that's it. Clearly, I'm all about, not about fairies. And no, I really enjoyed that. It's actually, I think the only other thing that I've probably read in a similar genre is Jodie Taylor, is it? She wrote The Time Police or something along those lines.
Okay.
Which is kind of sitting in a similar arena, I guess. Although, spoiler alert, it's time travel, not the undead. And so, yeah, I was, what made you think, oh, I'm going to do... Well, I suppose, no, rephrase that question. Did you think I'm going to write a crime novel but have this urban fantasy twist on it? Or did you think I want to write something fantasy? How am I going to do it?
It wasn't that planned, really. Like, I'm not a big reader in fantasy myself. I don't read, you know, I watch Game of Thrones like the rest of the planet, but I'm not a big fantasy reader myself. So it wasn't really a study in, right, I'm going to write a gritty crime novel and mesh in these fantasy elements. It just kind of worked out like that. I mean, I've said on other things and people always think it's BS, but I actually dreamt the opening chapter.
Wow. Amazing.
And I just wrote it down and I left it for a bit. And then the whole world kind of developed from that opening chapter, where it's not a spoiler because it's right at the start, where Joe Lazarus storms a farmhouse to bring down the drugs gang within it, and he finds his own dead body.
Yeah.
And then he's enlisted into this dying squad, which is a spectral police force that solves crimes that the flesh and blood, the living police, can't. So it was almost teaching myself how to write fantasy novel when I don't read fantasy. So it's good in a way, because you're not kind of, you don't have the preconceptions with it. You don't have stuff you're trying to ape. And I guess I would be more natural to lean towards reading crime novels and fantasy novels. The challenge of it, the exciting bit was meshing the grittiness of it, because to me, this is basically quite a gritty noir thriller. Meshing in those fantastical bits and not making it ridiculous.
That's a good. It could easily go down the Randall and Hopkirk deceased angle, right?
Yeah.
It can be a little bit silly but fun. But yeah, you definitely have achieved, I would say, a darkness to it that makes it very compelling.
Yeah, because I think there is, particularly with like supernatural stuff and crime, there often is quite a lightness of tone. So with the Rivers of London books, for instance, which we've got the same publisher, they're definitely, they are quite violent in bits, but they are a lightness of tone, which maybe mine don't have. Like mine are, by design, supposed to be kind of like hard-boiled noir thrillers. They just happen to have these fantastical bits in as well.
Going on the fantasy thing, obviously you dreamt about this opening, which is crazy. Do you believe in ghosts?
You know what? I've never had that question before until the other day when I did a live event. And I can't believe it's only the second time I've had it. I don't know about ghosts. The actual question I had was, have you ever experienced anything paranormal? Okay. Closest I've had on that was that I was doing a shoot at someone's house and I needed some extras. So I'd enlisted my 18-month-old son in it, because like, you don't have to pay them anything.
Smart, yeah. Very Victorian of you.
Very cheap labour. And the house we were filming in, it was in summer. So it was warm outside, and you stepped into this house, and no exaggeration, it was 10 degrees colder inside than it was outside. I've never experienced anything like it. I didn't see anything, but my son wouldn't come in the house. He was kind of really protesting. When we finally cajoled him in, there was the hallway and then the stairs go up, and he just looked up the stairs at something. There was nothing there. He just looked up there and he just kept saying, no, 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 no.
Wow.
A decent parent would have not made him do it, but
or thrown him up the
you
stairs.
Had work to do.
I needed a shot, so
that's just professionalism. So do exactly. You believe in ghosts?
I don't know whether I believe in them or not. I believe there's something. Yeah. I think it would be like arrogant to say no, I don't think there's anything. There's so many documented things, and there's so much on it we can't explain in the world. Then yeah, I'm definitely open to the existence of ghosts.
Yeah, I think that's the fun way to think about it. Sarah's a bit of a skeptic.
Okay.
I'm a massive skeptic, although I have to say, if I went into a house like that and there was a small child going no, I would have got the fuck out of there regardless. So
I'm a little bit more, I don't think there are ghosts, but I want to believe. I'm the Fox Mulder of the group, because I want to believe so badly that they are real. But that's why I think I don't read a lot of fantasy essay, but I love spooky things. So this book appealed to me very much from the spooky angle. My God, the opening prologue of your book is really terrifying.
Oh, good.
It
was supposed to be. You know, whenever I read that bit, I always get a little bit of a thrill, because it was quite a late edition. So the Joe strand is one that I often have to kind of rewrite from scratch. I never get it right on the first edit. And so that was quite a late addition. I do think it's quite an effective chilling start, because I think if you open up something too fantastical, you almost put the readers off. So the crime element of these books is always based in the real world. It is very, it could be ripped from a crime novel. There's almost no supernatural element to it at all. And that's kind of been a rule I've set myself. I kind of bend it a little bit on the third book, which is out next year. But overall, I want it grounded in the real world as much as possible.
I think you definitely, with that as well, because you've set it in Manchester, obviously. Are you from Manchester originally?
I'm not from Manchester, but I lived there for 5 years.
Okay.
And I really love it. And I did my MA in TV and documentary production there, and I stayed for 4 years afterwards. So I really, it's a place very close to my heart. It's somewhere I wanted to to use on film.
Yeah.
On film, on in book.
Well, it feels cinematic in the way you write it, I have to say. You can tell you're a filmmaker, I think, from the way that you describe the settings and, yeah, just play out the scenes.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some bits where I'm just thinking, God, I'd love to shoot this sequence. There's one particular bit where it's an attack on a train in Tokyo by this terrorist spirit organization. I thought, man, this would be fun to film. But yeah, I try. It's always getting the balance between I definitely think in scenes rather than chapters. Mm. I think about how I would film it, but also trying to remember that, you know, it's not a film, it's prose. So you've got to get the right balance between dialogue and description. And because I also don't particularly like long meandering descriptions of taps or, you know, like the floor. I want to try and keep the pace up. But also, you know, it's not a script, it's a book. So there is the key distinction when writing it.
I mean, not to put words in your mouth, but I'm guessing your first book, I think, was published mid-2021.
Yeah.
Right? It's okay, yeah. Just checking.
That's right.
Was that kind of I assume your other work was mostly shut down when COVID hit. So was it a bit of a, what am I going to do to entertain myself? And this happened.
It was decimated, my work was, not to dwell on it too much. And it's still affected because I do a lot of corporate and commercial stuff and just people haven't really gone back to the office. So it's still very much affected. But yeah, I'd signed the deal for these books in November 2019.
Okay.
And the first one was obviously already done, but I hadn't done the edits on it yet. And I kind of started the second one. And then, yeah, the pandemic, what was it, March 2020?
Yeah.
So they were a bit of a, when I'd kind of done the horror of homeschooling for the day, they were a bit of a passport out
different
of hell,
horror.
These books. Yeah. Like it was, I know a lot of people struggle to write, and maybe I would if I didn't have to do homeschool and look after the kids. But for me, like once I'd done that for the day, like this was my kind of escape. I think it's okay because I was writing the second book and that was about Manchester, which is a place I knew very well, but I wouldn't want to write always like that. Because you just, your world is so small and your day-to-day experiences are so small. And I personally hate writing at home. I'm someone that has to write in a cafe and have a little bit of life around them. So yeah, it was okay for the second book, but the third one, I was glad that I could vaguely go back into the world again.
You're probably the only person I know who did anything productive during lockdown, I reckon.
I know. Well, it's true. I mean, I think I would find it hard to motivate myself if I didn't have this deal, but it was like it's my first deal. And you kind of, I never get people that miss their deadlines on a first deal. I think I understand how stuff can happen in life that makes you do it, but I come from the freelance world. And like, if you miss a deadline, you don't get paid and you don't get the next job. Like you have to hit your deadlines. And I think is why it can help if you're from a creative thing like that. In the freelance term, you also get it with journalists. Journalists, I think, very rarely miss their deadlines because journalists can't really fuck around with whether the muse is into it today. Like if the muse isn't into
fired
it.
Fired, you know, pretty quickly.
Yeah, they do. So it's not really a luxury you have. So yeah, I'm a hit a deadline kind of guy.
Well, you've talked a bit about your writing process and where you need to write, but what do you enjoy most and what do you enjoy least about the writing process?
I think I enjoy most that thing of you're sitting down at the desk in front of your laptop and you might have a certain idea where the story's going to go. And then by the end of that 2-3 hour writing session, it's gone a completely different way. And like, there's a real magic to that because I'm not a plotter. I'm a pantser. So I want to be surprised by it because that's the joy of it to me. And when you're writing kind of police investigations, it can sometimes screw you because you're doing the investigation yourself. Like I don't know a lot of the time, like who did it or why they did it. I'm figuring that out myself. And like a real investigation, you can go down a bit of a cul-de-sac on it and you have to kind of come back and rethink it. But to me, yeah, it's that, there's a little bit of witchcraft to it of you start with nothing and then you have something at the end of it. It's quite special, really. The thing I like the least is you sit down and you think it's going to go one way and it goes another and you realize, oh, that just totally screws that 3 weeks of work I've done. That bit of the story doesn't work anymore. To be honest, I don't mind that too much. I think the bit I don't like is the uncertainty of it, which isn't as a writing process thing, but more as much an industry thing, in that it's all a step into the the abyss a little bit. By that, I mean that you're under contract and you write it. But I think, you know, I've been talking to actors doing this for like 15 years, and it's never, you've never really made it in a way, because you're not on these six figure advances. It's a kind of working job that's never quite enough to be comfortable with. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that keeps you sharp and keeps you hungry for it, which is definitely important. But that's probably the bit I like the least. Can you tell I went on submission 3 days ago? I'm getting twitchy.
You're recovering.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
So, I mean, related to your books, obviously, if you had to be a character from one of your books, who would you be and why? Is it really? I can't wait to hear your answer.
Yeah, I'm
this one,
intrigued.
Your characters are so a lot.
They are. I think I'd be Daisy May, who's Joe's partner, because she gets the best lines.
Yes.
And yeah. she's quite irreverent, and she kind of owns it. And she's confident and with it in a way that it's never really possible to be in life. You know, you always think, oh, wish, 3 hours later, God, wish I had that come back. Whereas she can kind of pull it out. the drop of a hat. And so, yeah, be Daisy May. She's my queen.
She is a queen.
She's pretty awesome. We'll allow that then.
Good.
Going back to what you were saying about writing about police procedural kind of aspects, I'm always intrigued by people that write about that without having a background in the police or that kind of first-hand experience. So, like, how do you go about learning and researching that?
I think it's easier for me because of this supernatural element to it.
Right.
And because they don't really have to follow the rules that the regular police have to do. Because I know a lot of people do police procedurals, and they kind of pay. There are various like ex-coppers that provide like a consultancy, really. So you go to them and say, would this happen? And say, no, this should never happen. Right. Which I think is a really valuable service. Because for me, it's always kind of this supernatural element, and they've got their own rules. I don't have to abide really by the living police's rules as much. You just have to make sure that you keep honest with your rules, because that's where I think where it starts to fall apart. If you're not keeping to your rules, why will the reader take this seriously?
So you're sat there with a Ouija board asking them for their rules.
Yeah, it's like, oh, come on, guys. Yeah, I can honestly say there will never be a Ouija board in any of these books. So it's like getting to number five and just running out of ideas.
There you go. Well, now we'll know. We'll look out for that in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah. Call me on my bullshit if that happens.
And also, with you were saying about how you are a pantser, so you go into it cold and you don't know where you're going to end up. Do you sometimes get kind of kick yourself if you make a situation too difficult to solve? Like if you make it like, God damn it, how am I going to solve this?
Yeah, I mean, frequently, because, you know, you don't want the characters to do what you want to do. You want your characters to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And that will often be to your detriment as the writer and to the plot. And so, yeah, I mean, it is like trying to solve a puzzle a lot of the time. And I think maybe my puzzles are simpler than a lot of police procedurals, but often seem a little bit more complicated because of the supernatural element. Mm. But it's a new skill. Like, no one teaches you how to solve a crime if you're just a regular person. So it's like a weird skill to learn later in life, how to kind of solve these Jenga puzzles and not make it too obvious. And then obviously, a lot of the time, yeah, I think Agatha Christie, like, she never knew who did it until the last chapter.
Yeah.
And I definitely get that. And I find the best twists are the ones that you don't plot, you don't see coming, the ones they surprise you. And that's when you get the little ripple of excitement. You think, oh, God, that's good.
I'm really clever.
Yeah, God, I'm great.
I'm a genius, everyone. Look, gather around, family. I'm so critically acclaimed, rightly so.
Exactly. And especially if you keep having to explain why you're brilliant. It's like trying to explain why a joke's funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's the bit where the bits that take you by surprise are the really good bits.
So if you don't plot anything or very little in advance, do you do anything retrospectively after you've written it? Do you record little details that maybe you were going to put in and didn't, but you'll refer back to, or are you just all in your head?
Oh, yeah, no, completely. I mean, if you get to the end and you've worked out the puzzle, I think you always have to go back and kind of retrofit little bits and like seed kind of the foreshadowing bits that lead to it. So it's not just a complete left field thing. It's like, that makes no sense with what's come before.
I dreamt it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, three books running.
That sounds like a lot of work.
I mean, it can be, yeah, but it's almost fun work. It's fun when you go back and you realise, oh, this does work. Like these bits I'm putting in, this whole thing fits together. It's almost a little bit of a miracle, to be honest. And you almost don't want to overthink it in case you jinx it and you can't do it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, that's the kind of thrill of it to me. It's like putting the puzzle together.
Do you now secretly think, because I obviously we read a lot of crime books and crime thriller things, and I'm fairly convinced I could solve a murder. Do you now think that you probably could if you needed to?
Well, I mean, maybe if it was like an easy one.
Someone's holding the gun. Stood next to you.
Yeah, and it, like a quick one. I don't want it to be like the Zodiac Killer where you're like, you're doing it for years and years.
You said you like solving puzzles, come on.
I mean, I do, but like, it doesn't look like those guys had any fun. Like, yeah, they never like, true. What, just sat, you know, Sunday on 4 o'clock, I'm just going to watch the football. Like, this crime and the grieving widow can wait.
David Fincher didn't include that part in the film adaptation.
He didn't, weirdly. Maybe it's on the director's cut, I don't know. But yeah, it's like I would be able to solve a super easy, wrap it up in an afternoon murder, maybe.
Sort of a locked room mystery, but the killer's still in the locked room holding the knife.
And he just basically admits to doing it. Yeah.
Just crying and saying, I did it.
And you're like, guys, I think I've nailed this one, you know. I think I've got it.
Yeah. This is going to make me captain, goddammit.
Yeah. Critically acclaimed captain of the police force. What typical crime genre trope are you a bit sick of at this point, if any?
That's a good one. Maybe two. Maybe kind of like the tortured alcoholic police detective that's got a secret in his past that we learn about maybe 2/3 of the way through the book. Actually, I realise I'm actually describing my book.
I'm sick of it.
It's in the trope. It's so difficult to avoid these tropes because they're tropes because they make the character interesting.
Yeah.
You know, if there's like zero problems with this guy's life or this woman's life, it's not particularly interesting. But no. I think the tortured alcoholic, I think we've seen enough of.
Sarah, do you feel attacked?
No, no. How rude. I'm not tortured.
We'll be the judge of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
And female characters just standing around waiting to be, the only purpose of them being there is to be kidnapped or tortured or something awful happens. Again, I think it's got a lot better for that. I do think. Mm. I think any good editor is going to say, when you submit a manuscript, you've got that in. It's like you've got to freshen that up. But yeah, it's been a very traditional trope over the years.
Have a cook a pie or something, at least, you know, if she's there.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. That's feminism.
So what was the last book that you read and loved? Clearly not something with a sad little woman in it. But
it's not. You know what? Like, people often, by what I write and talk about, they kind of are surprised at this, but I really like Leanne Moriarty's books.
Oh, okay.
Oh, all right, good shout.
I think she's so brilliant at writing character. She's as good as anyone there's ever been in writing character. And she's also, it's a masterclass in the way she writes, in that she kind of peels away the layers of the story. And so you learn a little bit more as it goes on. And her stuff was in the back of my right mind when I've written both of these books. Mm. So The Apples Never Fall, I think, was her last one.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm also a tennis fan. It has tennis as a backdrop of the story. And I could read her stuff all day. I think she's a brilliant writer. And that was it was a long book, but it never felt long. I didn't really see the ending coming. I thought it was just great. I'm a big fan.
I think, interestingly, her books, much like yours, have quite a large cast of characters compared to a lot of crime novels, but they're all fleshed out. Mm. None of them really feel like background characters.
They really are. I think I try and don't always succeed, but whenever I sit down to write a book, I try and make, you could take any of these characters and you can make the book about them. And they're interesting enough to carry that. And I think you could definitely do that with her books, 100 times more than with mine. She's brilliant at it. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
She's a real master at it.
She is quite good. I suppose, critically acclaimed.
And she's sold a few copies. I mean, yeah. If I can sell about a hundredth of her books, I'll be doing this in a gold bedroom.
Well, we can't wait to speak to you for book 7 or 8 by then.
Yeah, what better motivation?
The ultimate Zoom backdrop. That's all we ask for.
So that was the last book that you read and loved. Mm. So the question that we ask everyone is, what book would you be buried with? And actually, when we get answers, sometimes it's not that it's someone's favourite book, that there's always a reason for it, obviously. What book would you be buried with and why?
Yeah, that is a good question. Because the favourite book I always give is Kill Your Friends by John Niven.
Nice.
Which I absolutely love. It's kind of everything I love in a book. It probably wouldn't be that, though, because it's quite short. I don't know whether I'm dead when I'm being buried or whether I'm being buried alive incorrectly.
No, you'll be dead. We'll make I'll sure.
No one's ever asked that question, though. I like where your mind has gone.
Okay, write that down for the next book, quick.
Yeah.
No, I promise, this is my promise to you, I will make sure you're dead before we bury you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
I'm very charming.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah, maybe The Outsider by Stephen King.
Ooh, I read that. That's a good, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, and I think it's a great book, but I think the first 100, 150 pages of it are like some of the best stuff he's ever written. Mm. I found it really inspiring that someone who's been around for so long and has nothing left to prove kind of writes like he's still got something to prove. That's something I want to always try and keep. So yeah, I would, while I'm like toddling off into the afterlife, I'll have that to inspire me.
Does Stephen King have an influence on your writing? Obviously, he includes a lot of supernatural in his works as well.
Yeah, massively. And he was one of those people that in my early stuff, I was just basically copying in terms of style. If I ever got stuck, I would kind of have Stephen King's voice in my head and we just fall back on that style. And I've kind of got rid of that a little bit, or enough to not get sued as I've gone on. But yeah, I mean, I think he's a great in any whatever way you want to class that word. He's a great, and he's going to be remembered in 100 years. There aren't many people you can say about that, but if the world's still spinning, he'll still be remembered.
And he literally wrote the book on writing, right?
He did. Oh, I mean, it's always recommended by writers, that, and it's a fantastic book on writing. It really is, and so much of it resonated with me. Some of it probably won't resonate with other people, but yeah, it was. I felt like he was kind of speaking to me a little bit on it. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah.
I mean, he could write a shopping list and it'd be great. So
there'd be a twist and then no one saw coming. And
absolutely. Yeah.
I'm afraid one something that Sarah forgot to mention when she said we're going to bury you. And Sarah loves it when I do this because I always go super dark.
So unfortunately.
Unfortunately, the reason why you're dead is because you committed such a heinous crime that you were put to death for it. Yeah. What do you think you did? I always like to ask this question.
Ooh, that's a good question.
Who'd you kill?
Maybe you wrote too many great books.
That's it. It wasn't fair on everyone else, was it?
Too critically acclaimed.
Too many critically acclaimed books.
He's acclaimed to death.
The sheer power of those words, the population just couldn't deal with.
Maybe it's the awards and the acclaim got fit so physically heavy in your house, like a load of awards crushed you, like, you know, it was just like they drove you to the point where they crushed your mind and you snapped and just went on a killing spree or something. Who knows?
Again, I mean, this is all stuff that could happen. We shouldn't joke about it.
No,
it's
right.
So likely to happen that we shouldn't probably.
This is going to be used in your trial.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've always wanted to go to a murder trial, haven't we, Sarah? This could be our chance.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Just once, I'd like to get through a podcast interview where something couldn't be used at a future trial.
Keep trying. Today's not your day.
But so unfortunately, okay, so you critically acclaimed to the point of insanity and you are now, I'm afraid you're being put to death. So sorry about that.
But the That's all right.
Good. I'm glad you've taken it well. But the good news is, to make it slightly more palatable, shall we say, you get to have the death row meal of your choice. So what would you like? What will it be?
Well, I appreciate this makes me sound like an 8-year-old. I would probably have a cheeseburger cooked rare. Mm. You know, a good quality cheeseburger, not McDonald's. A very good quality cheeseburger cooked rare.
Quite a pretentious 8-year-old then.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I breed him. Fries and a peanut butter milkshake.
Ooh, nice. Is the milkshake from anywhere in particular or just any old one?
Well, you know what? Like Byron, when they were around, used to do an amazing one and they would have the chunks of Reese's Pieces. in the milkshake, and they don't do, well, Byron's gone bust, but they
has it?
The reason Byron went bust is they stopped doing those milkshakes
because your patronage fell off after that.
Exactly. And no one's ever made that connection before, and it really distresses me. Wow. But yeah, that would be the one I'd go out on.
I don't know if they have them in London. We certainly got one near where Frankie and I live. Shake Away, the milkshake chain.
I've not heard of Shake Away. No,
definitely do one of that. It's literally just you walk in and there's a whole wall of chocolate bars and cakes and all sorts, all the brands, and you just pick what you want and they blend it up for you.
Oh really? God, that sounds, maybe they'll have to make a pilgrimage there.
Controversially, yeah, Sarah, yeah, I'm always a little bit disappointed by Shake Away when I have one. It's never quite what I dream it will be. Maybe it's my choices. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the problem. But
yeah, wow, make better choices.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Sorry, I'll make better life choices. I'm sorry to let everyone down. Yeah,
just a suggestion.
So you said you're working on book three at the moment?
Yeah, I've just had the edit notes through for book three, actually.
How are they looking?
They're not looking too bad. They're not looking too bad. It's a bit of a strange situation because my editor is leaving. Well, she's left, but her final act, much like Clinton pardoning all these people in his final days of office, was to finish my edit notes on The Ungrateful Dead, which is what it's going to be called.
Oh, great.
And she's a brilliant editor. I'm going to miss her, but I'm glad she did these final notes. And they don't look too... they always look bad to start with. You always read them. Well, that's impossible. Can't change that. Nope, nope, nope.
I was right. They're wrong. No way.
They're wrong, yeah. Don't they know about this critical acclaim?
Exactly.
And then realization kind of seeps in there. Well, obviously they're right. And often the bits they've pulled you up on are just the bits where you kind of know are rubbish, but you just write extra confidently to try and paper over that fact. And Rachel just takes a scalpel and like nicks away at those bits. So yeah, I think that the hard bit on this is going to be cutting it down. It's quite long at the moment. It's like a bit of a multi-generational crime thriller, this one. So it will be trying to get the word count down a little bit, which is going to be a challenge, but I'm sure I'll manage it.
I'm sure you will. With all, you know, come on, critical acclaim in the bag, I'm
exactly.
sure. And will that be next year that comes out?
I think so, yeah. I think it should be next summer again. They've been kind of summer releases. So yeah, it'll be around
a year.
About.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of work.
It's weird being on this kind of year rotation thing because you're never that far away from another release, whether you, obviously it comes out in hardback and then it comes out in paperback. So you're always on a little bit of a treadmill with it. But it's a nice treadmill. It's a good treadmill. Well,
for now.
Is there such a thing as a good treadmill?
Yeah, I would disagree.
Into the gym.
I managed to work Harry Potter into most episodes, much to Frankie's horror. But J.K. Rowling was on the book a year treadmill until she got to the fourth book and then had a meltdown.
Yeah.
3 years we waited.
Well, this is it. I mean, like, because those books were so long. I mean, I've read those books again recently to my son. I absolutely love the Harry Potter book, so I'm with you. I've got your back on it. I mean, the fourth one is my favourite book.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. The fifth one, I think from the fifth one on, she doesn't have an editor, right? I think.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it, does it?
Because, like, honestly, the first 100 pages, like, they're just cleaning curtains and stuff. Yeah. And, like, it's like you could have probably done this in a couple of pages.
Yeah.
But then the end of that book's brilliant. It really did just need an edit, that book. But, I mean, the last book's fantastic. Like, it's just... They're great books. I'm a champion for those books.
Frankie's dying inside.
He says, sorry, Frankie.
It's okay. And
it's like J.K. Rowling's probably all right without my patronage. She seems to have done all right.
She's quite busy at the moment trying to ruin the lives of trans people. So she's quite busy.
It's a 24/7 job, you know.
It really is.
Clearly, yes. As we've seen from her Twitter feed.
Yeah.
I always find that interesting as well when anyone in any creative discipline gets to a point where they're so good that they don't need editing anymore. I think that was like Tarantino, when you see like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and there's about, you could cut 40 minutes out of that film easy. Just, it's him having a little wank over his own genius as he films.
I think, like, I'm a huge Tarantino fan, but I do totally agree with you. Like, I don't know if you read his book, his novelization.
I did.
Which is really interesting what he did with that.
Yeah.
I mean, that did feel edited. Actually, I met his editor on the other day, actually. And I said, like, how do you edit Tarantino? And he said, like, you know, I think he's been pretty open to it. Like, he's just kind of realized it's a different discipline. When you're film powerful as he is, I mean, I get it. You kind of go with your instincts and you probably have, I mean, I think all his films are brilliant apart from Death Proof, but they just do do need a tuck here and there.
Yeah, it was more just like the endless shots of Hollywood, than, you know, him driving around.
Yeah,
there's lots of long sweeping. They were beautiful, but they were long, needlessly long, and you know, all the feet shots. But I guess that's probably in his contract at this point.
Yeah, maybe so. It is a bit of a shame because there were bits in it that were so taut and gripping. I mean, when like Brad Pitt goes to the farm, whatever.
Yeah. Oh my God,
I mean, that's just a fantastic sequence. And he's a genuine genius, Tarantino. Mm. But I do think every filmmaker in history gets to a point where they are so powerful that they probably stop listening a little bit.
Yeah.
And they think, you know, well, I got to this point and didn't need to. So.
And I guess the same with J.K. Rowling, the same with him, is that they know that it's going to make money regardless. Doesn't really matter if it's edited down or not. People are still going to buy her book or watch his films.
Absolutely. I mean, I've not read this latest Stripe book, but like, fucking hell, 1,000 pages. Like, does it need to be 1,000 pages? I just don't feel it does. I've not read a word. I can definitely tell you it doesn't need to be 1,000 pages.
My understanding is she had a lot to say about
not her,
you know, anti-trans women who get bullied.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So it's funny though, isn't it? Because you think surely the reason, not the reason, but part of the reason that people got to this point of such success is because of the teams they have behind them as well.
Mm.
So to discount that seems insanity. I say I've achieved nothing in my life, but yeah. I would imagine.
Come on, man. You're dressed. You're here.
Exactly.
Yes, I am.
We're all very proud.
Don't do yourself down.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
So you mentioned as well before we started recording that you are doing in-person events now, which is really exciting. Obviously you missed a lot of the in-person stuff during lockdown. What's been the best part of doing in-person events versus the Zoom calls?
I mean, you can actually see real life 3D human beings.
Yeah, which could go either way.
Yeah, we can go either way. But just like people that you don't know coming up to you and talking to you about your book. It's like, if ever you get sick of that, you don't deserve the opportunities anymore. Harrogate, where we met, like I did my first ever signing at Harrogate. It's amazing. I mean, it's a kind of a moment I dreamt about for a long time. And the novelty is a long, long way from wearing off. Just people that, you know, giving up their time to come and listen to you talk about your book, buy your book, get you to sign it.
Mm.
I mean, it's what everyone dreams of. I know other people are a little bit shyer than I am, because I love meeting people. I love the kind of that side of it, whereas other people hate it. And I do get that. I'm an absolute tramp for a live event or a podcast.
And acclaim.
The acclaim is a lot harder to get than just putting up a live event.
You make it look so easy.
It does. Yeah, I know. But yeah, I love meeting people. I did an event last week in Manchester in the Central Library. It's an amazing building with two of the great authors. And that's another good bit I've enjoyed, is just kind of meeting your peers and making new friendships, which is, I find, something that gets harder the older you get because of circumstances, and was certainly harder over the pandemic because you couldn't see anyone. So it's been brilliant kind of meeting people and making friendships and having a new kind of tribe.
It does seem as well, obviously Harrogate it was my first time there.
Okay.
And I can't speak to other book genres, but it does seem like the crime writing community is so friendly and welcoming, considering how dark everyone's minds are. Like, everyone is very supportive of each other and engaged with everything.
Yeah, I've certainly found that. I mean, Harrogate it was my second one, so I've not been to many. And I the first year I didn't know anyone.
Mm.
You know, I kind of knew a couple of people from Twitter, which was good for an introduction. The second year I knew more people, but I've always found everyone really welcoming, and it's a pretty democratic festival as well, in terms of, you know, you get the punters mixed in with the writers, and there's no real kind of sniffiness to it. If there is a sniffiness, I don't think it probably lasts very long.
Yeah.
I don't find it particularly cliquey, and I've had a couple of people complain that it's cliquey, but I mean, any time where there's a bunch of people, they're going to go off in little groups, right?
Yeah.
That's just going to happen. So I'm a big champion of events like that. And yeah, if anyone's kind of listening, saying, oh, I don't really know anyone, is it going to be kind of a bit sniffy? Like, just go at Harrogate. Harrogate's very cool.
Yeah, I knew a few people similarly. And I really, really, the whole time, I wasn't speaking to people, but I met so many new people as a result of not having a group the whole time. So yeah, I was really, I'm gonna try and drag Sarah along next year, if I see if I can get
next her year. I'm there. Okay.
You should do. All I'd say is, like, give yourself permission just to go off for a couple of hours, because it is intense.
Yeah.
And I had an event early Friday morning. So I went up on the Thursday, which I didn't do the first week. And by Saturday night, I was pretty much done, to be honest, because it's like 5 days in one, because you keep meeting different groups of people and hanging out with them for a couple of hours. I was pretty exhausted. So like, never be afraid to say, right, I'm just going to go off for myself for 2 hours, read a book, get a coffee somewhere different.
Yeah.
Give yourself permission to do that.
Yeah, that's a good tip. And you'll be at Capital Crime. So that's very exciting in London.
I will. I'm very excited about it. Yeah, I'm doing one of the game shows.
Brilliant.
Whose Crime Is It Anyway?
So good.
So you kind of have to read up on your opponents. You have to read their books. So everyone kind of in the team picks another person's book to read. I'm doing my homework at the moment. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Great. Can't wait. I will see you there. Looking forward to it.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, Adam. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, good. Well, we try our best. So
you guys are both very funny. I've done loads of podcasts. This is definitely one of the ones I've laughed at the most. So well done.
Well done. We'll take that. Thanks.
We'll take some acclaim for a change instead of giving it to all of you.
Yeah.
Adam, where can people follow you on social media?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam Simcox. Twitter's probably a bit more booky. Instagram's more just pictures of my trainers and records. Nice. And occasional book hype.
Tarantino will love it.
Tarantino will be all over it. All over it. But yeah, no, like I'm always very contactable. I like talking to people about stuff, so books, hit me up.
Okay, you've asked for it now. Jesus. Get all sorts of weirdos contacting you now.
I hope so.
Including me and Sarah. So thanks for listening, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to recommend any other authors that we speak to for future episodes, please do let us know and we'll start our online harassment of them until they agree to come on. So you can reach us at the Red and Buried Podcast on pretty much all the social channels, or you can email us at redandburiedpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.
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 Do you like music and do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one, for example, Pick a Disc. I'm Matt Latham, and every fortnight a guest comes on to Pick a Disc to talk about an album for any reason that they want to. We'll talk about the album as a whole, we'll talk about songs, we'll talk about any personal stories about the album, any if they've ever seen the band live, and all sorts of other crazy tangents. And if at any point any of that made you want to listen to Pick a Disc, then you can find us on your podcast apps of choice or on the Facebooks and Twitters and Instagram under Pick a Disc. We're also on the We Made This Podcast Network on wemadethisnetwork.com and on Twitter at we_made_this. Goodbye.